Clouds breaking up a little bit. It is breezy out there and cool, too. We'll detail the weather forecast again coming up in just a few minutes. All right, so you're looking for a fancy box of chocolates to take to Thanksgiving dinner or maybe to buy somebody for Christmas or something over the holidays. So you're looking for something made in Switzerland or France or Belgium. Well, stop and think about it. That is not where cocoa beans are grown. Those are grown in Africa, where up until just a few years ago, they didn't make chocolate. That didn't add up for our next guest, who is the founder of the first ever chocolate company in Ghana, Stephen Wallace. And he's on the line with us right now. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well. When did it occur to you that something was a little bit off? Why are they making all this chocolate in Europe when, in fact, they don't grow cocoa beans there?
Well, it's about 26 years ago, and I looked at this wonderful cocoa that Ghana grows, reputedly the finest cocoa in the world. If you're a cocoa trader, it trades at a premium. And I thought, most of your listeners in Port Huron would probably thought like I thought and said, Switzerland makes great chocolate. And it seemed to me crazy because I knew there were no cocoa trees that grew in Zurich. It's just simply too cold. And this had to change. I thought we could have a fresher product that would actually taste better if we went from bean to bar, all in the country where these magical beans are grown.
Now, the difference between you and most people is, most of us will have that thought. We'll say, that's interesting. But that is something stuck with you, and you decided to ditch what you were doing in Milwaukee, which was running your family's T-shirt company, and open a chocolate company in West Africa. What made you take that leap of faith?
Well, I had been an exchange student to West Africa, and I lived in a very traditional family. My host father had three wives and 21 children. I did that when I was a high school student at the age of 16. And it was a transformational summer. I wanted some excuse to go back to Ghana. And as it turned out, Ghana had this wonderful cocoa legacy and crop. And I thought this just seemed like something I in the moment of clarity, which one doesn't get in life very often, really at the age of 29, I said, if I didn't try this at the age of 80, I'd have regret. And so it was really that motivation to do it and either succeed quickly or fail quickly. Little did I know I'd be starting a slow company in what turns out to be a fast company world.
Yeah, this, started 26 years ago. You've written a book about it called Obroni and the Chocolate Factory. We'll talk about the book a little bit. But I want to know more about why nobody had tried to make a high-end chocolate bar in Ghana if, in fact, that's where they grew all these great cocoa beans.
Well, I think a couple of things. One, Ghana was, an economist would say, at the lowest rung of the cocoa value chain. So they had grown the wonderful cocoa, and it was all the chocolate manufacturers were located in the United States and Europe. And there had just been all the cocoa, the chocolate-making assets, all the stainless steel machinery that turns a cocoa bean into fine chocolate was just located offshore. And it just over generations, historically, because many of these big chocolate makers are over 100 years old, that this sort of inertia had set in. And as much as Ghana thought about it, they really didn't have the appetite for the risk that it takes to go and try to compete with the world's largest chocolate makers. And it's a pretty daunting task. So I think it's a combination of history and a combination of a bit of inertia because you're comfortable enough growing the cocoa and selling the cocoa beans to others that for you to begin to move up that cocoa value chain is both a financial risk and an employment risk. You're taking people from growing cocoa and trying to train them to do something else, and that's inherently consumed with risk.
You said that you started a slow company in a fast company world. What exactly does that mean?
Well, I think right now we have we're all enthralled with these companies that create billion-dollar valuations in a matter of just a handful of years. And I think the reality sort of for most of us or the rest of us, at least my case, let's leave it at that, was that most companies take some years to get going. They'll take 5 to 7 years or longer. Most venture capital-funded companies, they would exit by then. And most venture-funded companies actually fail, probably 7 of 10 or even 8 of 10 fail. And I just thought for most of us, companies are built over a lifetime. They're family businesses. You cultivate your customers. You work on growing a business for the long term, and they have this staying power. So I thought there's some charms and really great satisfactions in building what I call a slow company in a fast company world.
This was something that you did, again, as you said, in this moment of clarity. You know, don't do it now. You're never going to do it. But it had to have been an amazing journey. What were some of the surprises that you encountered as you started up this company?
Well, I was surprised by the enthusiasm in Ghana for doing this. But beyond the enthusiasm, no one really knew what to do. So it was conversations that went like this. I'd sit for hours outside some minister's office, and they'd see me and they'd say, idea. Now, how are you going to do this? And I said, well, this is going to be a joint effort. We're all going to have to sort of put our heads together and our pocketbooks together and try to make this forward. And that sort of, I think what I saw was a difference in the appetite for risks. So in the United States, I think every 20-year-old thinks they could run Google or Microsoft or Facebook. And in Ghana, you'd have the most accomplished senior ministers often be very risk adverse. And they wouldn't have what I would say is sort of that confidence that, you know, maybe it's in some ways a bit of an American sort of confidence, a bit of a swagger that we can do anything, even if, in fact, we're a little inexperienced. And I was certainly inexperienced in the chocolate making business. I had never so much as sold a chocolate bar as a Cub Scout or as a in a high school for clubs, anything like that. So I have to be very sympathetic to my Ghanaian hosts. When I showed up on their doorstep, I was probably the last person they thought was qualified to start making chocolate in Ghana. So now, I'm grateful for them too, for their, at least their sense of humor and indulgence.
Did anybody else follow your lead? I mean, are there other chocolate makers in Ghana now, or are you still it?
There are some very small ones that have started. Some there are people that are doing processing of cocoa. While they're not making chocolate, they're going from, say, cocoa beans to cocoa liquor or cocoa powder. And these are the first stage processing, the constituent parts that one needs to make finished chocolate. But we pioneered this, as I said, 26 years ago, and the first to really, to this day, to sustain exports to real high-value markets like the United States and like Japan. So one of the things we do is we print all the labels here in the United States. We do all the recipe development, the intellectual property and the packaging here. We export that to Ghana. We put it around cocoa in these chocolate bars and a hot cocoa drink mix that we make. And then we've created a product that has inputs from both the United States and from Ghana. And then we wind up exporting it to places like Japan. So it was really an attempt to see if we could create a new globalism, a globalism that doesn't just cost jobs in countries, but creates them.
Talking with Steve Wallace, his book is called Obroni and the Chocolate Factory. Tell me the name of your company, because I don't want to butcher the name. Is it Omanhini? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, very good.
Oh, all right.
Thank you, Paul. It's Omanhini, and the Omanhini is the paramount king or paramount chief. So in Ghana, you have a village chief or elder. You have a provincial one, but the top one of them all, the paramount king, they would say, or chief, maybe we would say, his title is the Omanhini. That's what I wanted to call the chocolate. It's to this day the repository of moral and ethical authority in Ghana.
And how do we get our hands on your chocolate?
Well, you can go to our website, which is omanhini.com, O-M-A-N-H-E-N-E, and we have our chocolate gift boxes for sale. And in the morning like today, I'm sipping a mug of our hot chocolate, which is, I'm sure Milwaukee's the weather's a lot like Port Huron. It's brisk.
Yes. So
there's nothing like starting a day with some hot chocolate, and we've got all sorts of free shipping deals on the hot chocolate and on the chocolate for this week on our website.
Are you able to do most of your work remotely from your home in Milwaukee? Do you have to make frequent trips to Ghana now? Or?
Yeah, I go back and forth. I'm in Ghana at least four to five times a year. I've got a full Ghanaian staff over there that oversees the manufacturing when I'm not there, and I'm on the road selling here in the United States. That's what I can contribute. So depending what year it is, if we're expanding production, then I'm more time in Ghana. If we're trying to sell the product we're already making, then I'm on the road here in the United States.
The book by Stephen Wallace, by the way, lest anybody think that this is some dry business tutorial about globalization, it's not. This is a funny book. This is a funny story, isn't it?
It is. I think it's humor and got me through all this. As I said, it's a 26-year journey, and I just wanted to share some of the wonderful stories I had and introduce people to the wonderful folks I got to deal with in Ghana, who really opened their hearts and their homes to me 39 years ago when I was a schoolboy. So it's a story of some cross-cultural mishaps on my point, and at the end of the day, everybody's covered in chocolate.
Good stuff. Well, Steve, enjoy that hot chocolate this morning. We appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Paul. Be well.
All right, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.